Good evening and welcome to the Morro Bay Planning Commission regular meeting, Tuesday, May 20th, 2025. I'd like to point out that Commissioner Asia King is absent tonight, so there's just four of us, but that we do have a quorum. And we begin each meeting with a short moment of silence. Thank you. I hereby call a meeting to order. And I don't think there's any planning commissioner announcements. So I would first, oh, thank you. I always forget that.
Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And now's the time for public comments for items which are not on tonight's agenda. Do we have anybody in the audience that wishes to speak on a subject not on the agenda? Seeing none, do we have any AGP? Do we have any raised hands online?
Thank you, Chair Meyer. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. So that just brings us right into the previous minutes. We have an agenda, action minutes from a previous meeting on March 18th, 2025. Does anybody have any question about those minutes or comment changes? So we all approve, move to approve consent item A1.
Yeah, I'll move to approve them.
And a second?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. So motion carries. And that takes us directly into item number one, which is case number CDP 24-041-180 Atascadero Road, which is a request for a coastal development permit approval and demolition of the concrete plant and ancillary equipment structures, walls, pits, and for the removal of broken concrete piles at 180 Atascadero Road. The property is zoned visitor serving commercial and is within the coastal appeals jurisdiction.
Good evening, Chair Meyer and Commission. I'm Erlon Singwald, Community Development Director. So I'm going to hand it over to Eric Valentine, our assistant planner, to give the staff presentation. Eric's been the project manager on this application. This is actually his first time presenting to the Planning Commission, so I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge Eric's great work as an assistant planner. He really is a rock star in the department. Oftentimes, he's the man behind a lot of the projects that I've been able to be the face of in front of city council, like the battery plant urgency ordinance, the city-owned parcels inventory. So he's just an incredible resource to the city, and happy to have him present his first planning commission item. So
great. Well, welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you a lot. See if I can pull up the, all right, there we go. So good evening, planning commissioners and members of the public. This is hearing item B1 or CDP 24041 for property located at 180 Atascadero Road. So again, before you, this is CDP 24041, which is for the demolition of an existing concrete batch plant and ancillary equipment, walls, pits, and the removal of broken concrete piles at 180 Atascadero Road. The project will also include the demolition of an abandoned well on the property, which has recently been approved by the Cayuga Sanitary District, which we'll explain more later. So this slide is just to give you kind of a better idea of the existing conditions, how they've been for quite some time on the site. We've got the wastewater treatment plant, the former wastewater treatment plant here to the left, as well as the courtyard. So these images, they're very tiny, but they make up the project's demolition and topographic survey, copies of which have been published and are included in your packets for a bigger look. So just some background on the property. Prior to the recent zoning code update, the property was zoned for industrial and light manufacturing use. So records and some historic aerial imagery show that the concrete plant has been on the property at least back to 1963, prior to incorporation. So the applicant, Martin Marietta, assumed the lease of the site from Hanson Aggregates back in 2022. And one of the conditions of this lease was that the city, as the majority landowner, may require the demolition of any improvements made to the site over time to be removed by the tenant in order for them to be let go of their lease. So this is here before you today just because the municipal code includes demolition in its definition of development. And all development within the coastal zone like this requires a CDP. And because this property is located in the Coastal Appeals jurisdiction, you as the Planning Commission are the review authority subject to Coastal Commission appeal. So these are the standards for the visitor-serving commercial zone, which it has been rezoned to with the recent zoning code update. So as a demolition project, these development standards don't really apply, but at the same time, the demolition of the site will prime it for future development that will comply with these standards. So a little bit more about the ownership situation between the city and the Cayuga Sanitary District. So they are co-owners of the property, and the two entities entered into a joint powers agreement, or a JPA, back in 1982 that we are still governed by to this day. So this governs how the jointly owned properties are maintained and operated, and it gives the CSD partial control and decision-making authority over these parcels. So the board of directors for the CSD actually reviewed this project last week on May 15th, and there was a question as to whether or not they would give their approval of the demolition of a well on the site that we recommend the demolition of, and after that meeting, they have given their consent to that, so they agree to it. And then there was just a question about what in the lease gives the city, you know, the authority to make this requirement. There's a packet in front of you today that was just added. It starts on page 12, the whole PDF, it's page 11 of the lease, but section 4.04 just states that the parties further agree that the city also has the option and right to require the tenant to remove all structures, installations, improvements of any kind, or other property belonging to or placed upon the leased premises by the tenant at the termination of this lease. With that, it is the staff recommendation to approve Coastal Development Permit Application 24-041, subject to the attached findings and conditions of approval in Planning Commission Resolution number 0325, which is Exhibit A. So, and that's all.
Do you guys have any questions of staff? Mary?
I had a question. I'm forgetting from my read earlier, but was the well part of the development that the leaseholder installed, or was that installed previous to their lease?
So that's something that we're kind of unclear on, too. There's various records, and we're not even sure.
So I'm not sure if that well was originally part of the concrete plant operation. As you know, Eric mentioned, the concrete plant shows up on aerials as far back as 1963. I do know that it has been basically decommissioned and not in use for decades. It's been a very, very long time since it's been used, but I'm not sure if it was ever used in conjunction with past operators of the concrete plant or not.
Okay, I was curious because I was wondering if the tenant was interested in demolishing the well, or because it seemed like if the well was there prior to their lease, that wouldn't be something that they had installed on the land, and so that it might seem that we might not be able to like compel them to demolish the well, if that's making sense. It seems like it might be outside of the scope of what they would need to get rid of.
Yeah, it was actually included in the scope of their original submittal to us without any compelling on our part. So we went ahead and jumped at the opportunity to include it. So,
okay, thanks.
I'm at a loss to think of any reason that we might be opposed to demolishing this. Is there anything that comes to mind? Because I couldn't come up with anything.
Not to me, no.
Okay.
I had a question, which I emailed you about the other day, with respect to environmental concerns, and you mentioned that that might be taken care of in a further condition. Can you run through that condition or read that for us?
Yeah, so already included in the conditions is after this process, they will be required to apply for a demolition permit in CDP. And one of those requirements is to perform a NESHAP survey, which is through the Air Pollution Control District. And it's through them that if any asbestos or any other toxin is discovered, there's different requirements that are automatically triggered through that survey. Additionally, just with site remediation, that's something we've been discussing and think it's more for a future redevelopment to kind of assess rather than at this time.
My concerns were primarily due to the tanks and storage in the tanks rather than anything airborne. What's called a phase one environmental typically is done by an outside source to discern whether or not there's been any underground leaks out of those tanks, and if the written sort of research leads them to any conclusions there may have been, then they do a further phase two, which is digging into the soil to then do soil testing. And so that's, I guess we'll get into that later. It's not really a question, so I'll leave that there. Go ahead.
And so my assumption is that when the demolition is done, it will be done so that any environmental damage will be mitigated, so that the site will be acceptable as a visitor serving as it's zoned. Am I correct in that?
That's partially correct. So there are building code standards that they'll have to comply with for the demolition that would address air quality and some contamination concerns, for example, with removing the diesel tanks on site. Where I say it's just partially correct is that the actual remediation standard and requirements could change depending on what the future development plans and land uses are for the property. So after the demolition is complete, let's say at some point in the future, after the waterfront master plan update is complete, because this property is included within the waterfront master plan, and there is more of a vision defined for future uses of this property, we will get a CDP application and probably a conditional use permit application to establish some use on the site. And based on the proposed use, they would propose remediation to occur during that development. And the type of use that's established could determine the type and level of remediation that's required on the property.
So currently it's zoned for visitor serving, I think? And in the event that a proposal came forward to use it in some sort of visitor serving capacity and some additional work was necessary to clean up the land, whose responsibility might that be?
So let's take the visitor serving commercial zoning, as you mentioned. There's a range of different types of uses that could be allowed within the visitor serving commercial. It could be a hotel, it could be, retail, restaurants, shopping. And depending on that use, the remediation standard could look a little bit different. So we don't know enough about what the future development plans are for the property to require Martin Marietta to remediate to that standard. Plus, the actual language in the agreement talks about restoring the property, demolishing the structures and restoring it. I'd have to look at the exact language, but it doesn't exactly hold them to completely remediating any past contamination on the property. It's more just restoring it back to its its original state.
I understand.
So is the applicant here? Does the applicant wish to come forward with any testimony or discussion?
In a phone call with them earlier today, they mentioned they would be attending via Zoom. So if they're on the call.
Okay, so I'll go to AGP. And AGP, is there any raised hand from someone who looks like the applicant?
Let me double check just a moment. In the attendees, I do not see anyone So I do not see anyone in the attendees here, sadly.
All right, thank you. So then I'll go to questions from the public on this subject or comments. Anyone in the audience? Seeing none, back to you, AGP. Do we have any raised hands for public comment?
Thank you, Chair Meyer. Currently, I do not see any hands raised in the queue.
Okay, back to us. This is quick for discussion. Start with you, Mary.
My one concern looking at it was just kind of like the dust and demolition impact to kind of surrounding fields or recreational areas, but I saw included in the report that that would be taken care of as part of the further down in the process, so no concerns for me on this.
Tony? Okay. Well, then I'll just stick to my guns on any subsoil or subsurface contamination. As I read the lease, it did appear to have a teensy bit of language there, and I suppose that our legal staff can utilize whatever leverage is associated with that language, and I won't press it any further. I don't have any other worries other than that. I did visit the site and look around, and it looks the way it's always looked since back when I was a kid. So I didn't see any major issues other than there's a couple of above ground tanks which don't typically cause a whole bunch of trouble, but there was a few little areas that where the soil was dirty, and I don't know what that's from. It's probably nothing important, but I just thought the city should have a phase one associated with the cleanup prior to all the grading, because it's easier to see. And I don't mean phase one archaeological; I mean phase one environmental. And if it's at all possible to include that, if we do have the leverage to include that, I would highly suggest the city do that, because I don't think that the subsurface conditions would have been from previous use. They're probably from the use, because the areas which were dirty were immediately around tanks. And so I'm just looking at an abundance of caution here. And I don't know how to push that through in any sort of language, unless, Arlen, maybe you have a way or a suggestion to add a little more teeth to the, I think it was condition 38.
So we certainly could suggest an added condition to the resolution that would state something to the effect of, at the time of application for a demolition permit, applicant shall submit a phase one site environmental assessment and implement recommendations of that assessment for site cleanup.
Essentially, yeah, if the phase one comes back with recommendations for a phase two, I think that we should proceed to phase two, which is soil testing. It does actually say in 38, provide post-soil analysis report with soil contamination testing. So maybe it does say enough, and I'm being a chicken little. I was mostly worried about who's responsible. If the dirt is dirty, it doesn't really show what happens next. But I can sort of, we are presuming that the applicant will clean it up, but it doesn't really state that in here, and I couldn't find that in the lease either. So I'm just beating the drum here.
So maybe we're getting at there shouldn't be anything suggested in our decision today approving this proposal that would suggest in any way releasing any or all of the previous lessees of responsibilities to mitigate the damage to the land. We're not endorsing that in any way. We're agreeing to the demolition.
I don't think it says that we are in here anywhere.
But it might just go, just kind of as a sort of context.
I would say too, if we go down this road, I should probably very slowly kind of read the relevant provision of the contract and see if we think that could basically empower the city to require remediation of past contamination. I'm not so sure that it does, but I can go ahead and kind of read the language. It mostly focuses on removing, demolishing existing structures associated with the concrete batch plant. So
it's not my intent to add language to a contract that already exists. I only wish to point out that it's something that should be kept in mind by staff as you move forward through the permit process. Our attorney, the city attorney, would have the appropriate documents already and the arguments over those. It's not over anything we say now. So I don't think maybe, as I reflect on this, that we should add any more teeth, perhaps, than already exist in the documents. I don't want to.
And not to interrupt, but I would just, I guess, reiterate that oftentimes the remediation plan is something that comes with the actual redevelopment proposal when there is more information about how the site would be used. And I think that in mind, I would, and some of the limitations of how it's worded in the lease agreement, I would stick with just what are the standards under the, you know, building code and other state laws that have to be followed with a demolition permit. And those certainly will be followed and implemented by staff.
I think that's a bit different, though, from how I'm thinking about it too, Erlyn, is like when you're doing like a checkout, say you're renting an apartment, you know, there's a checkout process. If you would have stained the carpets, you would have to kind of like fix that. So I think that the way I understood the point about doing this ahead of redevelopment efforts is that it's more so just wanting to make sure that there's been no contamination of like the ground at the site on the part of the tenant before they kind of move along as part of exiting their lease. But I agree with you that I think that should be separate from what we're being asked to weigh in on here today.
And to be clear, I wasn't suggesting anything different. I was just that what we say here today really shouldn't suggest. I wanted to avoid the suggestion that we were saying that's the full extent of the lessee's responsibility. That's the suggestion I don't want to come out of this. So,
I think that contingency, or rather, condition 38, essentially, I'll just read it. I think it covers us because I'll read it. Provide pre and post soil analysis report with soil contamination testing. So right then we'll know if there's a problem. It's going to be before any new development. You'll know right then, and then it's up to the city and the tenant to deal with that situation. And I don't think it's going to drag on. And I don't think we need to carry it any further really after having sussed it out. So I'm ready for a motion if anybody wants to make one, unless there's further concerns.
No.
I motion to approve Coastal Development Permit 24-041.
Second?
Yeah. I second that.
Okay. Want to take the vote?
So, Commissioner Wachowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ingraffia?
Yes.
Commissioner DeFazio?
Yes.
Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
All right, motion passes 4-0 with one absent.
Thank you. So, next up, we have new business, allocation of water equivalency units. This is one of the more wonky discussions that we get every year. Thank you for coming. Oh, no, this is the excitement we all wait for every year. We plan for it years in advance.
So in 1984, the Morro Bay adopted Measure F, which is the allocation of water equivalency units for Morro Bay. The intent was to slow growth, and they estimated that they're trying to limit it to 12,200 residents. That's estimated to reach that population by 2040, was at that time when they put this measure. It's, as probably everyone knows, it's more like 10,700, something like that now. So it hasn't grown quite as fast as anticipated. At that time, the limit for residential was 70 units. It was subsequently lowered to 50 for residential and 65 for commercial. The residential is split 30 for single family and 20 for multifamily dwellings. We have yet to reach those limits. I included some of the history from 2019 through the present in the report, and the closest we came was in FY 2021 when we had 84 of the 115 that were used. So that most years, I mean, one year we had a total of one. this year we had a total of 22 WEUs that were used. 14 of those were single family, 4 were multifamily, and 4.32 were commercial. And WEU is a measure of amount of water that a single family resident is estimated to use, an average single family resident. So when we have other types of uses other than residential, there's a table, a water equivalency units table that's used, and it's a fraction of, you know, depending on the use, restaurants use more than, say, a bank would use. So those are assigned when they come in for a permit. Those are assigned, and we track them throughout the year. So, and I included that table if anyone's interested in how those are assigned. And so what we're asking this year, or this tonight, is to, again, allocate the same 50 WEUs and 65 residential WEUs and 65 commercial WEUs for FY 25-26.
Have any questions for Cindy? Okay, I have one for you. I think I asked this last year, but I can't ever remember. At the end of the year, the clock resets to zero, or do we, as I understood it, I think, they don't roll over the unused credits into the new year?
They do not. Yeah. So, yeah, every fiscal year. So we're starting July 1st, we'll start at zero. Yeah.
And you, as you stated in there, we've never reached the full allowance?
No. There was a period of growth. My understanding when this started, there was some more growth than people were comfortable with, but it seemed to have tapered off. Well, then the recession came, like 88-ish, and things slowed down, and I never have reached that level of increase again, but it's there if that happened.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. So I'll open it up to questions from the public. Anyone from the public have a question about the water equivalency units or comment? Hi, Betty.
Hi, Betty Winholtz. I think the other factor to add to what has been said is that we did not have state water yet at that point. And so it was as much the growth as it was that there was limited water sources. And so they wanted to make sure we had enough water to cover the growth. My question, however, is more a request. And it states in the report that we do not track ADUs separately as new additions. And even though it's not required by state law, it might be of value to the city to understand how many units they have added outside of the single family and the multifamily, because we know a number of ADUs have been added, and we just don't know how much. And it, for the state law to say that you don't get to add any more water to that property when you've got maybe another one or two people living there is kind of imaginary, because if you've got more people, you're using more water. So it might be of interest to either the Planning Commission and or the city find out how many actual housing units we do have that include the ADU. And the other thing that's not included in there is the vacation rentals. And so when they come on a weekend, that's only a weekend maybe out of the year, but are there 10 people in that house, or is there 2 people in that house? So there's lots of ways we're using water that we're not accounting for, unless someone knows other than what I have assumed. Thanks.
Thanks. Any other comments from the public? AGP, do we have anybody with a raised hand online?
Thank you, Chair Meyer. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay, well, then I will close public comment and bring it back to the commission for deliberation or further comments. Anything?
I think Betty's comment is worthwhile. I would endorse doing that if we can get it done.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting data. Is this something that we need to continue as a process if we are no longer necessarily concerned about water supply in Morro Bay?
So, Erin Lansingwald, Community Development Director. So I'll respond to a few of the questions that have come up. First of all, in regards to ADUs, so our annual WEU limit is essentially what most jurisdictions call a growth control ordinance or a growth limit. Under state law, ADUs are exempt from any growth control that a jurisdiction enacts. We do certainly track and report out on ADU development. In fact, the majority of new dwellings, generally, unless we have a larger multifamily project like the Haslow project that went in at 405 Atascadero Road, generally in a typical year, most of our units are actually ADUs and JADUs. And so we report those out in our annual housing element progress report. We report them out also in our annual general plan progress report. And we report those numbers in the budget document as well. So we have a few different reporting tools that we use to provide that data to the public. As far as the question about assigning a different water equivalency unit to a short-term rental because a short-term rental may be used different than a typical residential use, generally the way a short-term rental ordinance is set up is that it treats a short-term rental as essentially being equivalent to a residence. If a short-term rental complies to all these operational requirements regarding parking and noise and other standards, those are intended to ensure that it operates more or less how you might expect, what you might expect from a residence. We all know that there are definitely differences, which is why we limit the number that are allowed and the density of them that are allowed on a block. So the theory is that they operate, that a short-term rental is essentially the same as a residence with some short-term rental usage of that residence. And there was actually the last question, Commissioner Wachowski, that you asked. I
was wondering if we need to continue doing this process
right
now that we're on state water.
So my thoughts on that, having been a planner in the county for 20 years and a couple different capacities with different jurisdictions, as the city engineer explained, in the 1980s, many jurisdictions up and down the state enacted growth control ordinances because of a big surge of growth that was seen in the, mid to late 80s through the 90s. And like Morro Bay, at least the jurisdictions that I've been involved in have never or maybe very rarely have ever reached their cap. I know San Luis Obispo County has a countywide 2.3% growth rate, and it's debatable whether or not, I think there was one year where the county came very close to that limit, but never actually hit the limit. And I know it's similar for a lot of other jurisdictions, but I know that jurisdictions often, just for peace of mind, want to keep that growth cap in place just because of the unknown, the uncertainty. There could be circumstances where we do get close and it's just a nice kind of safety buffer to have that in place just in case.
And I'm absolutely on board with a growth limit, but is this actually the way that we're enacting the growth limit, is through the water allocation? It is. There aren't other kind of enforcement mechanisms of the growth limit?
I mean, this is effectively our growth limit.
Okay.
One thing I was going to add to that is projects like the Panorama project that is potentially on the horizon. That would be beyond the limits. It's more than the 50 or the 30 that would be allowed per single family. So that one, they've been told that they would need to phase that. So it has been used, the limits that we have in those sorts of situations.
Joe, any further?
I just have a comment then with respect to the discussion. In many parts of Morro Bay have more second homes than they used to, so it's kind of the opposite of what we've been talking about with vacation rentals, and those second homes are often vacant for many months at a time. And so I guess my question is this. If there were just one water meter on the city of Morro Bay, and you look at that water meter, how does that look year over year over year? I mean, like over the last 10 years, let's say, or five, just a wild guess. I'm not asking. Is it increasing, decreasing, roughly staying the same?
It's a good question. It did decrease at one point with water saving measures in the early 2000s, and it was reevaluated based on that. My understanding, and Damaris would give us a better answer about that. She tracks the water very closely. But that the usage is pretty steady in about the last 10 years, overall usage.
I was just always curious about that because we pay for water by the unit, essentially, and the city needs that money for income. And so I would imagine it's sort of counterintuitive, but to ask everybody to save money when we actually have water is a problem, I'm suspecting, but it's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
I just wonder the future, as I listened to SLOCOG over the last years, SLOCOG actually predicts the population of the county will be reducing by the end of the century rather than increasing, especially in the coastal areas. And I think, I don't know, but I'm guessing it's primarily because of the second home phenomena. You see it in Cayucas and Cambria and Carmel in a big way. Anyway, do we have any further? So looking for, because this is a receive and file, or do we have an action here? We're asking to approve it, I think, right?
Yes, to allocate, basically.
So do you want anything?
Allow us to allocate those WEUs the same as we did last year.
Then I move that we accept the allocation as written in for a forthcoming year.
Do you have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor? Aye?
Yes.
Aye.
Any opposed? No? 4-0. Thank you. Then I would go to Planning Commissioner comments. Anything there?
I just wanted to say a comment of how beautiful the city looks right now. I think with all the new ceiling and striping, I think it just looks great. I think great job to the city in getting that done. I, at least in my part, it hasn't felt very disruptive at all either, so it's really exciting to see.
Joe.
And I have a request for possible help. There's a community called the Estero Bay Kindness Coalition, which at this point provides food to something on the order of 250 families in the region. I believe it's two bags of protein-rich foods and one bag of fruit and vegetables, in addition to snacks for about 100 school students in the region. They're actively looking for another location. They're about to lose their current location in Morro Bay, I think, in about a month or so. And they're looking for some property. At a minimum, it should be a building with 1,000 square feet with some adequate parking so that they can store and assemble these bags. So if anyone in sound of my voice is aware of such a location or might know somebody who might know of a location, just go online and go to the Estero Bay Kindness Coalition and let them know what you have.
Thank you. Erlen, do you have any comments for us?
Well, we haven't met in a couple months, so I actually have a list of updates I'd like to give. Thank you for this opportunity. So first, looking ahead at Planning Commission agendas, so the next meeting is scheduled for June 3rd, but we are about to send a cancellation notice because we don't have any projects that are currently queued up for Planning Commission review by June 3rd. After that, June 17th, that meeting will likely be canceled. We still are discussing if there's any projects that will be ready, but I wouldn't be surprised if that meeting also is canceled. I also wanted to note that the due to some of the Vets Hall improvements that are planned, future Brown Act meetings are going to happen in the community center for the next couple months, so May 28th through July 21st. So when we have our next Planning Commission meeting in June and July, they would be in the community center, not here in the Vets Hall. And I'm sure Public Works Director will be giving out more information on that, but since we're talking about upcoming agendas, I wanted to make sure to mention that. As far as a waterfront master plan, so that's been a big focus of our department recently. So we will have our first Waterfront Master Plan Advisory Committee meeting on June 5th. That is going to be a standing monthly meeting, first Thursday of the month, beginning at 3 p.m. And June 5th will be, again, our first WMPAC meeting. On June 10th, staff is going, we are planning to bring a contract to City Council with these for the selected consultant for the Waterfront Master Plan update. I'll talk a little bit about that process. It was a fairly extensive process selecting a consultant for the Waterfront Master Plan update. We received 10 proposals, I would say 10 solid proposals from well-qualified consultants. So it took a significant amount of time to review all those proposals. We put together a Waterfront Master Plan consultant selection committee that Commissioner Wachowski served on. Stephen Peck from CFAC also served on the selection committee. He's also one of the members of the WMPAC. We had Cherise Hansen from Embarcadero Master Leaseholders on the selection committee, as well as some key city staff as well. We rated and ranked the proposals, and we held interviews with the top four consultants. So we had almost a full day of interviews with consultants. And then we narrowed it down to three consultants, and Susanna, our assistant planner, and I, we had one-on-one kind of meet and greets with the project managers for those top three consultants, because we spend most of our time working with the project manager, and we're such a small team, we really thought of the project manager for the consulting firm on the Waterfront Master Plan would almost be a key city team member for the next couple years, so wanted to make sure that was a good fit. So based on that pretty thorough selection process, we are now recommending a consultant. I'm not saying which consultant until we finish contract negotiations and have that ready for the City Council meeting on June 10th. But thank you to Commissioner Wachowski and other community members and staff who served on that selection committee, because it was a pretty major time commitment. Kind of a similar vein, so something that I haven't talked with the community or Planning Commission much about, that it's actually been pretty interesting and exciting opportunity for our staff, is we have partnered with a Cal Poly City and Regional Planning class. It's Ryan Stanwyck's City and Regional Planning 341 class. It's a design studio. That class had students separated out into teams, and each of the teams, it's an academic exercise. They, for lack of a better word, pretended to be a consultant that was responding to the city's request for proposals on the Waterfront Master Plan update, and they prepared concept plans for the different redevelopment sites in the northern portion of the Waterfront Master Plan area, like the battery plant site, the power plant property, the Morrow Dunes site, the old wastewater treatment plant site, and actually 180 Atascadero Road was also included in there as well. And the students presented different concept plans for the various areas, and we interviewed them actually using just about the same questions that we use for the interviews with the actual real consultants. And it's a really fun experience, I think, for students and staff, and allowed us to allowed us as staff to begin to really think about the different kind of issues and concepts that we'll be discussing with the actual waterfront master plan update. So I wanted to thank that Cal Poly class for their work in that exercise. It was really helpful for staff, and I think a good experience for the students as well.
Will you be sharing those with the WMPAC committee?
That is a really good idea. So they are going to have, so when we met with them for the interviews, they still had kind of their rough concepts. It wasn't 100% done yet, but they are going to present their final concepts to us, and there could be an opportunity there for presenting to the WMPAC. I like that idea. So that's it for Waterfront Master Plan update. I also just wanted to mention, you know, I talked about upcoming Planning Commission agendas and how, you know, we are going to cancel the next meeting. I wanted to kind of go down a list of the larger current planning projects that we're working on that will come to Planning Commission at some point in the next, say, 6 months or so, just to give you a heads up. Of course, probably the biggest one is the Panorama subdivision, 3300 Panorama, 46 lots. I think the Commission and public's fairly familiar with that project. We are currently in the administrative draft EIR stage, where the EIR consultant is preparing different sections of the EIR, and staff is reviewing them and providing feedback for edits. We are at a point in that project where there have been, you know, some questions and concerns were raised during the EIR scoping meeting about contamination on the property and what is the status with the regional board for the cleanup of that contamination. Based on some more recent discussion we've had with the regional board, trying to understand, you know, what it will take to be able to have their case closed out, we've learned that some additional testing is going to be required, and the regional board and applicant are kind of working on a testing and possible remediation plan, and that's just going to take time, which is going to push out the schedule for that project. So originally the EIR was scheduled to be released. The draft EIR would have been released this summer. Now we're looking closer to end of 2025 or early 2026 for the draft EIR to come out on that project. Next is 1180 Front Street. So that is just below Surf Street here. And it's a 10-unit kind of boutique hotel project right next to the Salty Sisters existing hotel. That project will be coming to Planning Commission. Currently, it is on hold pending some environmental information that we've requested related to soils. Also, I know there's been some communication in the community about the fact that there was previously, prior to the comprehensive zoning code update, there was a standard that said no building shall exceed the, you know, elevation of the bluff height here above Front Street, and that standard did not get carried over to the new zoning code after the comprehensive update. So we're kind of starting discussions with the applicant about what that could mean for their project. And as I'm going to get to in a second here, we are kind of looking at possibly including that standard in a ordinance, a zoning code cleanup package. Of course, the Vista application has been withdrawn from the city, and there's no news to report out as far as you know, what Vista's next steps are. We haven't been in communication with them recently. There's another project that would eventually come to Planning Commission if it does continue to go forward. It's 545 Atascadero Road. It's 16 townhomes that are proposed. We've been in some discussions with the applicant on that project. They've ran into some financial challenges, some feasibility challenges, I should say, with building that number of units and being able to meet the infrastructure requirements with the water line extension for the fire hydrant flow requirement. So that's something we're just in discussion with the applicant on and waiting to hear how they want to move forward with it. Then finally, Seashell Estates, that's a project that we've discussed quite a bit in the past. I've been in communication with the applicant. We are still waiting for the applicant to resubmit some revised plans to address some comments that we need to be able to present the project to the Planning Commission for you to make a decision on it. So those are the kind of larger kind of current planning projects that we're working on that the commission may see in the next 6 months or so. Finally, as far as long-range projects that we're working on, I already talked about Waterfront Master Plan update. Moro Elementary, so that is one of the City Council's three citywide goals to acquire or partner on Moro Elementary. I do have a meeting scheduled this Thursday to tour the property with an architect and a structural engineer, just to begin a discussion about what it might cost to renovate that building to City Hall or say like a community room if there were an affordable housing project to be developed on the site and that developer wanted to use the existing Morrowell School as a community room. This is really nothing more than information gathering. Whenever there are public discussions about the property, one of the recurring questions that comes up is, you know, what would it cost to renovate that building? So it's just data collection, and I will report out as there is more to report on. Then finally, I mentioned ordinance cleanup package. So what this is there are a few amendments to the zoning code that are necessary, whether it's to implement changes to state law, like ADU law, or just kind of less controversial or non-controversial zoning code cleanup. So one of those is updating the ADU ordinance to meet state law. Another relates to A24. So A24, of course, was passed by the voters. It requires voter approval to change land uses on the Vistra property and some of the surrounding parcels to anything other than visitor-serving commercial. We need to actually make changes to our zoning code to reflect that same process that A24 established. So those would be some very kind of specific targeted amendments to the zoning code to be consistent with A24. And then finally, we would possibly be looking at what it might take to reestablish that bluff height limit that has been discussed. And that may be included with this zoning code cleanup package. So I know that was a lot, but again, it's been a couple months. I just wanted to get you all up to speed and I'm available for questions.
Questions?
Well, I'm glad that the returning the bluff height limitation is under consideration. Given you know that in the foreseeable future, it may look like the Planning Commission has pretty modest employment. I wonder if you know we couldn't start thinking again about some of the things that we didn't have time for in the previous terms. I'm thinking of the additional community benefit report. That might be something that I don't really want to burden the office at all, but I'm thinking there's some things that we, so one would be the community benefit report. We'd spoken often about having some sort of a joint meeting with the Harbor Advisory Committee to really sort of learn in particular how when these leases come up for renewal, what that process is about, and how the requests for the new lease are communicated, that sort of thing. And then finally, the Downtown Design District. I remember being, you know, expressing thoughts about how confident we could draft other people in the community who had expertise and sort of get that initiative to its second stage without really burdening the development office. So I'm just wondering if some of those things we could undertake in the absence of a whole lot of projects that need examination and approval.
I think maybe that we could even do, I hate to make a subcommittee, but with respect to the design district, the downtown district, that might be something we could discuss as a just to avoid brownout conflict. You and I could chat about that and maybe come up with something to report out on.
Okay.
Sure. I don't know that Erlen has the staff headspace at the moment to push that.
So for efficiency's sake, I mean, where my mind goes is how can we take some of those efforts and tie it into things that we're already doing with these other long-range projects? I think, for example, the waterfront master plan update, the public benefits discussion is definitely going to be a big part of that. I think also, you know, coordination between community development and harbor. I think, you know, one of the items in the scope of work for the waterfront master plan update is looking at all of the, you know, all of the Tidelands lease sites that are, you know, scheduled to for renewal and what could be, basically plans for redevelopment of those sites. That would all be discussed as part of the waterfront master plan update. So that's kind of, what comes to mind for me.
I would like to hear just a short intro from Eric. Just Eric, what's your background? If you're done, Erlen, I'd be interested to hear how you found Morro Bay. Just, you know, the 1 minute discussion, but sure. Welcome.
Thank you, catching me off guard a little bit. I went to Cal Poly some years ago for city and regional planning. So working with the students, as Erlen mentioned, has been kind of interesting for me, being on their side of things not too long ago. And then I stuck around in the area for a year after that. It was COVID. I just loved the area so much that I didn't want to leave. But I did leave after that year to go to grad school in New York City. And then after that, lived in Washington, D.C. for 2 years, working for a jurisdiction out there, City of College Park in Prince George's County, Maryland. My wife is from this area, so we always wanted to move back. Just decided to do it, and the day I got back, we drove across the country, job opening opened up, jumped on it, and it worked out, so I've been lucky.
Yeah, congratulations. Happy to have you.
Thank you.
I think we're wrapping up then, unless there's any further comments. I'll adjourn the meeting to sort of, I guess, a date uncertain at this point, but next time we'll be at the community center. Rather than here at the Vets Hall. And Erlen, the WOMPAC is also meeting at the community center?
That's correct for June 5th. I think for the record, I wouldn't say a date uncertain. I don't think actually the cancellation notice has been sent out yet for June 3rd. So just for the record, you should say.
Okay, then we're adjourned until the 3rd of June.
Right.
Thank you. Good night.